Well, that night I came home and I was very tired. It had been a really long day. I was waiting tables and I was looking forward to going to sleep. So, you know, I had recently rented an apartment with a roommate. We both worked together at the same restaurant. And it wasn't a great place. In fact, it was, you know, pretty small, but it felt safe and I felt good being there. My bed was on the floor, so we didn't really have furniture yet. And in fact, we had just moved in a week earlier. So I put on, because I was so tired, I put on my favorite nightgown. It was navy blue with thin white pinstripes, and it had an applique of an apple in the front. And I loved that nightgown. It was a Christmas gift. I put it on and went to sleep that night, and I started to hear noises when I was sleeping, but I was in a really deep sleep. It sounded like a shuffling sound in the background. And when I woke up, there was a pillow over my face and a gun pressed against my head, against my right temple. And I heard the question, "How old are you?" And I said 18 through the pillow, and then a washcloth was shoved into my mouth, and I was raped. A few years earlier, a speaker had come to my high school, and he said, "If you ever find yourself in this situation, the goal is to get out alive." And so I remembered those words. They were in the back of my mind that night. And I was really scared, but I was very calm because I wanted to live. Then after my sense of security was taken away forever, the rapist left. And I thought I heard him come back in because I heard a noise. I heard the door close, but then I heard a noise and I saw a light turn on. And I thought perhaps he had returned, and I was really scared at that point. But it turned out it was my roommate coming home. And I said, "Can you please call the police?" So we called the police and they came. And, you know, we were in an apartment complex. So, you know, and we had sliding glass doors. And all I remember is seeing the parking lot lit up with police lights. But at that point, it all just hit me and it was so real. And I started to get hysterical. So the police came in and they were asking me questions, but they left me in a corner. So they'd ask me questions, but when they weren't asking me questions, I was sitting in a corner by myself. But I noticed pretty quickly the questions started to sound the same. "Did you know him? Can you identify him? Or you want a date tonight?" And I couldn't understand why they were asking the same questions over and over again. But I noticed that they were very thorough in my apartment. They dusted every nook and cranny of that apartment with some sort of powder. I didn't understand at the time that they were dusting for fingerprints. But I did understand pretty quickly that they didn't believe me. It was clear that they were skeptical about whether I was telling the truth. So after a while, this went on for quite some time, they said, "You need to call someone to go to the hospital with you." And I was sitting in the squad car, and I watched my friend Kathy pull up with her mom in another car. We weren't even together. We were in two separate vehicles. And I was driven down to Mercy Hospital. I didn't see Kathy while I was there the entire time. I was by myself. They told me to put on a hospital gown, which I did, and they did an examination of me. They scraped evidence from my body, and it was a very humiliating experience, which unfortunately I did alone. The doctor also asked questions, and then they rolled me out into the hallway on a gurney. They gave me a little blanket, and I laid on a gurney in the hallway by myself for over an hour. Eventually, they rolled me into a private room, still laying on a gurney and staring up at the ceiling, and a female detective came in. All the guys at my apartment had, all the police officers at my apartment were guys, and now a female was in my room, in this private room with me, and she started asking me the same questions. "Did you know him? Can you identify him? Why can't you identify him?" And it was very clear that she didn't believe me either. So I found out many years later that while I was laying in the hallway on a gurney, she was explaining to my friend Kathy and her mom about how I made this all up. She was saying that, you know, this was a lie, and the way they knew it was a lie is that there was a footprint under the window in my apartment, and it happened to be the exact same size as the red Keds that they found in my bedroom. So they thought I had planted that footprint. She also said that there was a screen ripped out of the window, and they believed that I had ripped that screen out. So I was basically forced to confront the fact that the police didn't believe me. It never occurred to me that they wouldn't believe me. I just assumed that they would be there for me. I was handed a pink piece of paper, which was the discharge slip from the hospital. And it was really the only connection I had to the fact that October 14th, 1983 really happened. I still have that pink piece of paper to this day because it was the only connection I had to that night. I was forced to go back to a home that I really had tried to escape. I had nowhere else to go. I had been living out of my car, and I had no choice. I had to go home. But I found out very fast that my family didn't believe me either. They had talked to the police, and the police explained how they thought I made it all up. And my family didn't believe me when I begged them. I stood in the hall, and there's a doorway. I grew up in a row house in Baltimore City, and there's a doorway between the dining area and the kitchen. It's a small doorway, and I stood in that doorway as my mother stood in the kitchen, and I begged her. I pleaded with her to believe me. I said, please believe me, I'm telling the truth. And the response was always the same. Well, we believe something happened that night, but we don't believe that you were raped. And that's how I went into the next phase of my life. I was 18, trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And I realized I had two choices. I could either curl up in a ball, or I could go forward. And it took a while. It took a couple years, actually. But I eventually got back on my feet, and I went forward. And over the next 19 years, I got a master's degree without finishing high school or college. I bought a house, and I raised venture capital and built a technology company. It was great. My life was terrific. I was really proud of the success I had, but I still wasn't really happy. And I knew that there's something else I had to do. I had to have my rape case investigated. And, you know, I had tried over the years. You know, I'd made phone calls. I'd even gone back to the police department, and there was never any progress. And, in fact, they always just handed me off to someone else. There wasn't any interest in even investigating the case. And then one night, I came home. It was a Friday night, and I like to watch the news and crime shows. And so I turned on 2020, and the show was about rape kits that hadn't been tested. And they chose a city to go and test some of these kits. It happened to be Baltimore. So they wanted to go into Baltimore City and test 50 rape kits and see if they got any matches. And could solve any rape cases. And the fact that they came to Baltimore spoke to me. I said, this is a sign. It is time to get this case investigated. And so I became determined that they were going to investigate my case. I had wanted it done before, and now I just wasn't going to give up. I wouldn't accept no for an answer. And so I started calling again. I called as many people in the police department as I could find. I went all the way up to the police commissioner's office. No one called me back. They usually sent me to someone else. And I didn't make any progress for a couple months, but I wasn't giving up this time. I knew that my case could be investigated. I knew there was DNA from that night, and I knew that it was possible for it to be solved. So on this campaign of calling, I finally got a detective on the phone. He answered the phone. He said, Bernie here. It was Detective Bernie Holthouse. And Bernie really was the first person who actually asked me what happened. He said, tell me what happened that night. And I explained to him in detail all the way down to the pinstripes on my pajamas. I didn't know at the time, but he was trying to figure out whether or not I would be a good witness, how good I could remember what happened. And I was pretty clear about what happened. I remembered every detail. And Bernie decided to take on my case. That's the first time anyone believed me. He quickly brought in his partner, Detective Chet Norton, and they made it their mission to investigate this. At that point, I was really happy because at least it was investigated. I never thought it could, you know, the idea that they could really solve this was just something, it's not something I was willing to consider. I couldn't even go there. I wanted it investigated. Well, Bernie started checking, and he quickly realized that the rape kit was gone. The DNA had been destroyed. So that could have been the end of it, but Bernie didn't give up. He found fingerprints from that night, and he ran them against the police database, and he got a match. 19 years after I was raped, Bernie Holthouse solved that case in 3 days. And at that point, my life changed. There was a sense of freedom that I didn't know existed. We went to the arraignment, and that was the very first time I saw his face. The rapist was there, and I actually heard him before I saw him. As he walked toward the courtroom, there were chains around his ankles, and I could hear them scraping along the marble in the hallway behind the courtroom. He sat down and looked around, and he looked at me, and I looked back at him. And I made a decision that I was going to be there every time. We went to trial. He ultimately ended up pleading guilty, and part of that is that he had to provide his DNA. That turned out to be a really important point because 48 Hours did a show about my case, and a couple years later, that DNA was connected to that show, and we solved dozens more cases. The police were able to use that connection to connect this rapist to dozens of other cases. Now, he stood in the courtroom that day in front of me and said, "I'm sorry, and this is the only time I've done this." And the truth is he had raped dozens of women, and no one believed them, and no one believed me. And that's why I'm here today, because I know what it's like to not be believed, and I also know what it's like to have someone believe you. And I am doing this for all those who were not believed.